Prepaid services in association with Who1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Number 179, I'm Adam, and I was going to say something, a quote from the episode, but I forgot what it was. Oh, I know what it was. It's my moral duty to introduce Rhys Parton.
It is possible he has gone off to rendezvous with a flying coffin.
Matthew Kressel.
I don't know what came down in Recovery 7, but it certainly wasn't human.
Mary Lang. Wow.
Go to the light.
Yes, I was going to do that one. Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Hello, Space Control. This is Recovery 7. Will you clear us for re-entry?
And Robert Haynes.
How many beans make five? Right, cut it open.
And just to keep into tune in last week, and Robert Haynes.
What?
You obviously didn't listen to last week's show.
I don't know what happened. You introduced me twice.
Well, I just done it again, just to be consistent. Right.
The proper response would have been, "Hello, Space Control. This is Recovery 7. Be clear as re-entry."
Right. We're going to be talking about the Ambassadors of Death, and I've been looking forward to doing this episode.
No, Adam.
What?
The Ambassadors of Death.
You're right. I've been looking forward to doing this episode for a while because I've had it on video for a while, and then they brought it out on DVD fully colorized. So this is the first time I've seen it fully colorized. So yes, it was a treat to be able to get to see it. And obviously they've enhanced the picture quality and everything. They've done a really good job on it. Really? So this is the best.
Make it interesting.
Anyway, so it starts off with this. Well, I thought it was quite funny that the van. I can't be Van somebody or other.
Van Leiden.
In the spaceship. And you make some sort of adjustment, and it turns the camera upside down, which is a bit weird.
Yes.
I thought that was quite funny. So he's talking very softly into his microphone. It's also quite interesting to note the microphone he's got is a bit like the one that Matthew used to use not so long ago. Similar sort of quality. The space station set, I thought, was quite impressive. The fake beard that had wasn't so impressive. Did look
like his fake accent.
He was in the middle.
Yes. Fake everything.
Yeah. Did rather look like he was in the middle of eating a badger. And Michael Wisher, his beard a bit more realistic. And then going back to unrealistic, unfortunately, the Brigadier's tash looked like it had been. He basically had two slugs attached to each side of his philtrum. Anyway,
that's stopping from being cool. I knew that was coming, damn it. I'm going to sulk now. It worked. They're not slugs. It's not that thick. That's what she said.
Sorry, that was really funny. The next shot is of the reporter, played by Michael Wisher, on the telly. And the television is fantastic. You see, it's a nice retro 1960s colour TV. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And it looks old and battered, even when this went out. But anyway, then we see the Doctor fiddling around with the console. In the TARDIS.
For the first time in colour, because we didn't see it in the previous story.
Yeah. Yes, and also this is...
See that it's green.
The penultimate...
No. It is green.
Be quiet. It's the penultimate appearance of William Hartnell's TARDIS console.
TARDIS.
So it's nice to get a good detailed look at this piece of kit that they're recreating for the 50th anniversary drama, Adventures in Time and Space.
Looking forward to that.
Or even Space and Time, whichever way they decide to say it. So, yeah.
Space and Time.
Did I mention that I quite like the actual set of the space station and the big plasma screen they had up that was viewing the thing? I thought that was really very good.
Looked like CSO to me.
Yeah, but some of it. No, there was one that wasn't CSO. Oh, never mind. You detracted me from the story. Now, The other interesting thing, was the docking of these two spaceships. Of course, the Apollo Soyuz mission, I think that was 1973?
75.
Yeah, even later. And I remember that when I was quite little.
And, 1 point to Matthew.
But it's a fact that they've done this well ahead of the actual thing happening live on the telly, if I remember rightly. But yeah.
Although what was going on when this was happening was Apollo 13.
Yeah, but did they do any dockings in Apollo 13?
No.
Yeah, live on television, but throughout, starting in the Gemini missions in the mid late 60s, continuing into Apollo, docking became a sort of a regular feature for a long time of American manned space program.
And the model work in this reminded me of some of the things that you would see on, say, CBS, demonstrating how the docking would work.
Yeah,
fair enough. Wasn't that good, but it was okay for the time. I thought I thought it was acceptable. A bit rude.
Sorry.
Oh, I see.
It's just your dirty mind.
So anyway,
I've been contaminated.
Now something, the Doctor's watching it on telly, and something makes him decide that he should go up to the space station. I can't remember what it was now.
Signal.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. Have you noticed also with this story, the Brigadier stands with his legs astride quite a lot. He's sort of like, don't quite know.
Well, this is the most active I've ever seen the Brigadier.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, actually, he's action shots. Yeah.
Yeah. Brigadier. I mean, he's shooting people and launching people and all sorts of stuff.
Indeed, lots of grappling and wrestling.
Brigadier.
Yeah, but have you also noticed that all the women working at the space station are quite nice looking? Which,
even if one of them deliver a line for her life.
Which one was that? Was that the one? The latter part of the story with the eyelashes, or the dark haired one at the beginning?
Towards the latter end.
All right. Is that the one that screamed at the end?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, Reese?
Yeah?
You know that dark haired lady? Did you think she looked like a bit like Hex from Good Game?
Oh, yeah. She did. And that's going to mean nothing to anyone else.
Exactly. That's
no,
the point
that's
I was
why,
talking about.
That's
tonight.
Why I asked you, Reese.
Yeah. Anyway, right. So we meet Carrington and his rather daft looking sort of carnation buttonhole, which is very camp, actually. And then there's a big battle in a warehouse.
I like that bit.
Yes.
It's actually quite good, actually. It's quite good. So this is the scene, you say, where the Brigadier shoots loads of things. But the funny thing was, the Tasho bloke says he's ordered only to kill if absolutely necessary, and he goes in there killing people when it's not absolutely necessary.
In the making of documentary, Derek Ware, head of Havoc, says that he's killed in at least 7 times in this story.
Yeah. And you can see him too. It's not like he's you know, a generic looking kind of guy.
It's like Terry Walsh is probably killed a few times, but he always
is.
Someone remind me which DVD has the documentary about Havoc.
Not sure.
There's a latest one that has Toby Haydock rounding up the guys for 4 of them anyway now, and he does a stunt. That's on the Mind of Evil, I think.
Mind of Evil. Okay.
I thought it was on this Inferno special edition, or maybe I've got
it confused. Yeah, I think it's maybe the Inferno, I know it's one of the recent ones, but because there's been so many Pertwee ones come out lately.
Does that mean I'm going to have to go and buy Inferno again?
Yes, it does. Anyway, listen. Right. There's a bit where the Brigadier and the bloke with the Tash have sort of got to have a bit of standoff, and there's an injured soldier behind who's going to swing something at the bloke. And for some reason, the Brigadier shouts, "Right now," instead of just waiting because he was going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
That was, I thought that was stupid. A bit silly. I agree with Mary because I'm right.
Well, it's in the script, I'm sure.
But it's a really good scene. I liked it. I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yep. Well, we can talk about the script later.
No, we can't. I haven't got time. now, before I obviously... so that's episode one to a T. But what is interesting, like I said before we reviewed this last week, is the double sting at the beginning, which only used for this story.
Yeah.
Which I suppose was just experimental. but it's not. It's like a title sequence, an after title sequence, pre-title sequence, then a title, and then the episode. It's a really weird sort of combination.
Don't worry, I'm just looking at something Reese posted.
I don't stop looking at porn. Just, I mean,
it says family no. Podcast. Look at the size of that thing. Said that she did.
Yeah. Anyway, right. So the doctor, meanwhile, visits the head of the computer room, which is Tartalian, is it?
No. At the beginning of the episode, was the head of Pertwee.
Yeah.
Who then threatens everybody with a gun because he's a bit paranoid. And then he grabs Liz and then dumps Liz on the floor. And then, yeah, it's. I think it was Reese that said that there's quite a lot of padding in this story.
Yes.
So fortunately, padding is.
There was really
a good.
Is
a
that
good,
why I fell asleep several times?
A good reason that I.
So that's
I can
because
use
you watch it at
2 o'clock
in the morning
button.
Or whatever.
No, it's probably that as well. I watched it at midnight after a very long day. Yes, I'm just fast forwarding at the moment.
Who's
through said
whose cat
padding.
Was that?
Oh, that was mine.
Aww.
He wants to go outside, but it's 5 in the morning and pitch black out, so I'm not letting him out.
silly thing.
Yeah, he'll keep at it until I let him out.
What, Mary or the cat? Robert said silly thing. I was just. Anyway, so basically they've got Google Earth on the computer and they're trying to... triangulate the position of this landed capsule. And I thought the capsule prop was fairly good, full size thing.
Yeah.
A little small.
Yeah.
Acceptable. A little small.
And I love how they're able to land the capsule, so perfectly.
On his feet.
Through our space programs, our guys were lucky if they could hit the ocean,
Mary, this is British space technology.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay.
Which really exists, yes.
Well, NASA did... NASA, throughout the 60s, did look into landing the, particularly Gemini and Apollo, capsules on land, and it was just decided that... because of the shock of impact, it was easier to put them down in the ocean. So, but it's entirely feasible for them to have put a capsule on land. Also,
except
Kirby, go ahead, Robert.
I was going to say, if you actually have a look at the capsule itself and its landing pads, I wouldn't say so. It's got no hydraulics or whatever to absorb the impact.
Well, pedantic moment of the week.
Thank you. I made it to a pedantic moment of the week.
It does have those feet or whatever that it lands on. So.
Right, can I just point out?
Matthew probably spends at least a day a month over at the U.S. Space and Rocket Center in Huntsville.
Can I just say, it's interesting I said about it's British space technology, because later on in the story, all the Americans can do is send up an unmanned vessel to monitor the spaceship, where the Brits were sending up men. Who's eating? Right, I've said, right, I'm going to bring in a rule now. If anybody rattles any sweet papers on the show, they will get points deducted for the quiz. You can mute your microphone. You can, all right, even biscuit paper.
My biscuit paper then.
Or biscuit paper. But you can mute your microphone if you so wish to unwrap something before eating it on the show. I'm not having any rustling. Is that my magic?
That makes everybody jealous.
Is it allowed?
That's correct.
You can pour your Twiglets out into a bowl.
Yeah, because Skype is equipped with a mute button. Moving on to this particular episode
I don't have any snacks this week.
The Brigadier went on the radio and he didn't use the old unit,
I thought that was quite interesting.
They hadn't thought it up yet.
But there was also a shot just after him on the radio. Of a woman, a bloke with some binoculars and another one with some headphones, really badly out of focus. I wonder why that was.
I know. What was with that? Was that a problem with the transcribing of it?
I don't know, but it was terrible.
Very odd.
But I didn't think it was that small, and obviously it fitted on the back of the trailer. I'm talking about the capsule I'm talking about. I thought it looked about right.
It looks like it's about the size of one of the Apollo capsules, which you could fit three men into, which is what this is supposed to be.
Exactly.
But But it's supposed to be for a 7-month mission.
No, well,
I know.
Second most pedantic moment of the week.
Mars Probe 7 is the one that does a 7-month, and Recovery 7 just goes into Earth orbit to recover it. I know.
Okay, right. Now, there's a helicopter that goes chasing after the unit team with the capsule. And the pilot of the helicopter has got a strange mask on.
Spaceship.
Yeah. I didn't quite understand
that was,
what...
John Abernary, wasn't it?
Was he actually playing Captain Carrington with a strange mask on, or was he just...
Yes.
What's a strange mask for, then? Anybody know?
It's a disguise!
Himself!
They're up in a helicopter, and nobody else can see them apart from each other.
Well, they're apparently using the incapacitation gas, so presumably they're meant to be gas mask-like things as well as a disguise.
Ah. Oh, okay.
Matthew, is that the one that when it flies down, it goes, whew, whew?
there's a funny stunt. Obviously, this is always like choreographed for stunts, this particular James Bond type story. What I thought was really good is the helicopter sort of hovering, allegedly, and there's a stuntman trying to open up the door, and that it's being opened and it's closed, it's open, it's closed, and it's open, and he falls off and tumbles down the obligatory embankment.
That happened because they were trying to do a slightly different stunt where he was going to hang from his knees from the strut.
All right.
And when the pilot was opening the door, it would hit. That was Derek Ware, by the way.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who was hanging. It would hit his knees, and he would not. They couldn't get it working the way that they wanted, so they just made what you saw because they were running out of light, and I believe it cost something like 79 pounds just to start the rotors on the helicopter.
Yeah, apparently they tried to film it 2 or 3 different times, according to the commentary, and never got it to work.
Oh, no, I read that the very first time they did it right, but the cameras were not on them.
Well, that was a bit silly,
the first
it?
Time. So then after that, every time they tried it again, it wouldn't work, yeah.
Anyway, back to the story. I noticed Bessie had its hood up for a very rare time, because that really
didn't happen. Yeah, I was surprised to see that. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, John Pertwee does his sort of comedy voice when he's pretending to be a helpless passerby.
Then he uses a Batman trick of having an anti-thief device.
Yeah, funny. Right, so where are we now? So the Discovery 7 capsule is back at the Space Center, much to the help of the Doctor. All right, it says, all right, recovery. Right. Anyway, yeah, it's back at the blimmin' Space Center, and the Doctor's very smug when he says that it was him that...
Doctor?
Yes.
The Doctor, yes. It's Doctor Who.
Conductor.
Now, here's the obligatory... posh twat in the shape of Sir James.
Sir James.
I think every episode of Series 1 of John Pertwee's era had a posh twat in it.
John Pertwee is a bit rude, though, to everyone.
He's very abrupt. Very abrupt.
Very pompous.
People he doesn't like.
Yeah.
He mellows
impatient.
With time.
It's impatient.
I know,
and also,
I
you've got
know.
To bear in mind, he gets frustrated easy because he has things in his head which he can't access because the Time Lords have blocked his memories.
Yes.
So you can understand him being a little bit grumpy.
Mm.
But anyway, so they try and contact the people inside the capsule, but there's a strange, you can tell pretty quickly it's a recorded message, but when they obviously the next episode they go into the spaceship, it's a real rubbishy old dictaphone that's actually just
yeah. it's a Walkman
is it?
It's a little reel-to-reel.
No, are you joking?
Yeah, but I just thought it was quite funny that obviously that could have only got in there via the aliens themselves, and would the aliens really have? Because when you actually see the interior of the alien vessel...
No,
hang on,
no,
let me
no,
finish
no.
before you tell me I'm wrong. When you see the alien vessel, you see that little globe, which was quite a clever idea to sort of make them them think it was a TV. Go on then. Yeah. I'm wrong, obviously, so carry on.
The tape recorder was planted in there by Carrington's men when they removed the ambassadors.
Slow them down.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I got that one wrong, didn't I? Doesn't happen very often. There we are. That's it, listeners. That was it after 178 episodes. Finally got something wrong.
You're just going to do what you normally do. You'll just edit out the bit where you're wrong.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Listeners should know that normally he just edits the wrongness out.
Listeners should also know that I can also edit all that stuff as well. Anyway.
That's right.
The tape recorder reminded me of a very Moffat thing, you know, having the Bastion Narada repeating what everyone says,
exactly.
Sort of thing.
Well, so obviously, obviously that was influenced, wasn't it?
And the spacesuit.
Meanwhile,
the spacesuit that you couldn't see into was...
Who turned out the lights?
Yeah, okay. Anyway, meanwhile, it's Carrington's... Be quiet! It's Carrington's lot that actually have got the space-suited aliens.
You do your Carrington impression, then.
They must have sort of grabbed them. I'm surprised they didn't get some sort of... Oh, they were wearing radiation suits, weren't they?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the policeman at the end doesn't get killed when he gets touched by him, so maybe it's not fatal every single time.
Touched by an angel, I mean.
Maybe it's only fatal when it's convenient to the plot, perhaps.
Yeah, and even though they put a guy in the truck who dies from the radiation, they can all stand around no protection on while the ambassadors and not be affected.
There's an awful lot of shooting and punching and beating up and stuff in this story, has to be said.
Yeah.
And a lot of people being kidnapped, let go, and re-kidnapped, and I think they call it padding.
No, really?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I still found these padding bits quite entertaining. I thought it was quite good fun.
Yes. So it was more interesting than I thought it was going to be, having read the descriptions of this one.
I have to say that I didn't really... I was very tired, and sometimes when I'm watching stories when I'm very tired, I do start nodding off. This one held my attention quite well, even though I was obviously watching it to glean questions for a quiz. Episode 6 was the only one I struggled with, to be honest with you. That's the one I haven't got a lot of questions for question 6, because it didn't seem to be a lot of details that I thought anybody might have picked up on, so there's a lot of things missing from that one.
Well, for me, it was episode 4 that I kind of napped through.
No, good. Well,
there'll be lots of questions for that, Mary.
Episode 4, right? Unless you make another one. Mary's questions, episode 4. There we go. Thank you for that.
Episode 7 was my problem one, because I fell asleep.
Lots for that, too.
Two nights in a row, I fell asleep.
Oh, dear.
I watched the first 3, and I thought they were quite good, except for the extended padding scene with the helicopter in episode 2. But come episode 4, I was kind of thinking, all right, can it kind of hurry up now?
Yeah, I mean, that was
the story. The story was really interesting, and I thought it was a nice twist to not have the aliens be bad necessarily, but I just thought it was getting a bit too long. They're walking slowly down the hallway.
I must
confess, I did watch this whole thing in one go, about up to about 45 minutes before we started recording.
No, I couldn't do that.
What?
No, I couldn't.
Oh,
anyway,
is mine.
Back to the story. We quickly meet the character Lennox, who's played by an actor who always plays the same type of
manic-y
sort of slightly insane sort of character.
I reckon he should be in every Doctor Who episode. He's such a great character.
I think you find
he worries
dead.
So much.
Probably.
I know. That's why he's got no hair. He's been scratching it out.
He just pulls it out.
And then also, I spotted him in one of the James Bond movies the other day, actually.
I was trying to detect if Regan had trying to suppress a Scottish accent. It's got a very strange accent.
Yeah, Cyril Shapps is one of the scientists who invents the submarine tracking system in The Spy Who Loved Me.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Does he get killed in that? Because he seems to get killed in every story he's in.
Yeah, he's in the helicopter that blows up.
No, there you go then.
Yeah. Oh, we've seen him recently. He was in Tomb of the Cybermen.
He was. He died in that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only
Planet Spiders. He dies.
yeah, the only Doctor Who story he appears in where he doesn't appear to die is Android Tatara.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
I have to watch that.
He's the Archimandrite from that.
He's the what?
The Archimandrite.
I thought you said the Mask of Mandragora. I thought, what the heck?
Yeah,
that's what it sounded like.
Is it an episode?
Anyway, basically, Liz is arranged to meet the Doctor, and it gets chased by a full Cortina. And she's wearing a hat that seems to be very well glued to her head when she's driving around.
It's just windy. To disguise that it's not her driving.
Very windy
that's
day.
Right.
A very.
Who's driving, is it then?
High speed, allegedly.
Derek Ware.
Well, it's the Derek hat had a.
No, no, it's not Derek Ware. It's the
well.
other.
Roy Scammell?
Is this the episode where she was heavily pregnant?
It's Roy Scammell.
Oh, sorry, not heavily pregnant. Slightly pregnant.
Yeah, she was pregnant.
Roy Scammell up the lovely legs.
And the father of the child is actually in the episode as well.
Yes.
Was he?
No, in the story. Not in the episode, in the story. So yeah, so basically she decides to throw herself over the side of this bridge type thing.
It's weird.
She did. All right, it's a weird. David Weir. Yeah, we said David Weir was driving the car.
That was a weird choice.
Yeah. And she was rescued by what then was just a sort of stuntman actor, by a man who played a character in Image of the Fendal, the one that says one of my favourite lines ever in Doctor Who. Do something. I think it's, I'll set the dogs on you. I think my line he said before is just the fact that he says, I'll set the dogs on you. Because obviously I live by that command with you lot. Because if you don't, you know, conform, I will set the dogs on you.
Smithers.
Yeah, it's Marlowe Weir in Marlowe.
And also
on
Hill
Road.
Yeah.
Thank you. And also he was in EastEnders for many years playing Charlie Slater, who was Cat Slater's dad and granddad of... what's the other Slater? Zoe Slater, who is played by Michelle Ryan, who was in Planet.
I'm interested now.
Planet
wow,
of
you sure know. You sure know the genealogy of EastEnders.
Planet of the Dead. That was the one I was thinking. Yeah. So, but anyway,
Going back to the hat for a second. There's the very last Big Finish audio Caroline John did. The last post.
Last post. With,
yeah, which is. Involves Lishaw and her mother, and it's set in the bits between the various stories of season 7. And in the aftermath, the section that's set after Ambassadors of Death, her mother makes a comment about the ridiculous hat that she was wearing.
Yeah,
but there was another function to that hat.
Yes,
frisbee.
Well, because of the drizzle and the general humidity, her hair would have gone into an afro. Yeah. So the only way
her wig would have.
Yeah, well, her wig. You're right. It would have gone into an afro. So they put the hat on to keep that down.
Anyway,
but they had already shown that Bessie has a. You could put the roof up on.
Yeah,
Bessie,
but they
so
did not miss
it. They do it
exactly.
But anyway, didn't stop the hair.
I love the scene later on when. You've got the Brigadier and several soldiers in Bessie with guns sticking out the sides.
Going,
yes. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I like that. Anyway, back to this episode. Obviously, continuity is kept quite well because when she's taken down into the sort of little evil hiding place, she's carrying the hat.
Bunker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
I tell you what. You know, for unit scientists, is it standard for the females to have short skirts like that?
Well, it was in 1970.
Must be.
But she had like a woolly outfit. It was a woolly dress.
I know, it's a woolly, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if she's wearing it on this occasion.
Woolly bully?
Pardon? Is that a song?
We had to have something for the dads to sit through the episodes.
Yeah, and there wasn't a camera angle that was a little bit suspect when she was crouched down.
Story.
What?
No, I said a good story.
What do you mean?
Something for the dads. Oh, forget it.
The dads, huh?
But anyway.
for the races as well.
Yeah, that's another thing that got me. You know, you're looking at that. So she doesn't look too bad in this story. And now, you know, you're looking at it, and because where they've sort of improved and enhanced the image quality, you can't. Well, it's difficult to believe it's made nearly 40 years ago. We've gone 40 years ago, isn't it? It's 43 years ago, in fact.
Yeah.
And poor old Caroline John has grown old and passed away. And, you know, it's just...
Yeah, sadly, no longer with us.
She didn't grow that much old, though.
I know, but she...
You know what I mean? Compared to what she could have.
Yeah, well, if you look at her then and what she looked like before she passed away, obviously. And it's... Because video does sort of bring things... sort of more back to life sometimes than the film. It makes it more lifelike.
Yes, yeah, because and, of the,
yeah.
And when you see, you know, video, I remember seeing a video of the Beatles performing in Japan, and it was obviously Japan had colour TV, and this colour video of the Beatles is just amazing when you look at it and think, God, it looks like it was only filmed yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But, and obviously you see film.
Was that, was that a Beatles reference yesterday?
Do you know, I wrote a quiz book about the Beatles, which you can buy on Amazon and on iTunes.
Yeah, I've heard that someplace.
First plug of the week.
I do the jingles on this show.
Kirby, you must be a morning person because you are just on it this morning.
I think I'm running on autopilot.
Yeah.
Not auto.
Was, and that Caroline John, like I say, was pregnant, but she's doing an awful lot of running in this story.
I know.
Well.
Yeah.
She's a bit, surely yeah, a bit she... dangerous for the baby.
Mm.
Well, she did. She when she says so herself on, I think it's the Unit Family Part 1, which is on the Inferno DVD, that she made a. She deliberately did not go and tell them that she was pregnant because she was worried about losing her job. Because when she was hired, she was told, "Don't cut your hair and don't get pregnant." And sure enough,
did she cut her hair?
I don't
everybody's
think
saying
so.
She's wearing a wig. Well,
no,
I was going to say she's wearing a wig. So what does her hair matter?
Yeah.
And it was a terrible wig, I thought.
Of course, Matt Smith's going to have to wear a wig for the regeneration story.
50. Mm. Unless another thing.
A Doctor Who podcast annoyed me when I was listening to that this morning, by the way. When they talked about that we won't get to see Peter Capaldi playing the Doctor for another year. Well, are they forgetting something?
Christmas.
Yeah. They're bound to write him a couple of lines, aren't they? So if he's like when Matt Smith played the Doctor for the end of time part two for about 30 seconds.
Yeah, he goes for his almost leg stuff, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Plus, aren't there rumors saying that that he's going to be not in the only in the Christmas special, but in the 50th anniversary special, which is a month before?
I thought there might be. Have they got? I think in some ways they have to get him in there somehow. Because
I heard that they're already editing the anniversary special, so I don't know when they would have shot footage with him.
Well, I think they've known Capaldi's the Doctor for quite a while, and I think they've had they could have had a closed set and shot something, you know, for it.
It could also be wishful thinking.
No, I agree.
The source of all this is IMDb and Wikipedia, which are publicly edited.
Yeah. Well, let's say I wouldn't be surprised if he is in it.
He could be wrapped up in all this white stuff. It's the watch.
The watch. I knew you were going to say that. Totally pointless, though, isn't it? You can't recognize him.
Well, in positive news on that note, I've just read within the last 24 hours on the Casterbridge website that Jenna Louise Coleman has confirmed they will be filming in January.
I can correct you on something.
Oh. Go ahead.
Jenna Coleman. Oh. She's dropped the Louise. It's Jenna Coleman.
Yeah.
Her name's Jenna Louise.
Oh, yep. It's made my day.
The headline listed it as Jenna Louise Coleman. I know her as Jenna Louise Coleman, so if I can call her Jenna Louise Coleman.
But it's wrong.
Yes, Kirby.
Matthew, don't you have a little bit of news from Alabama?
Ooh.
I do, but we can talk about that later.
Well,
after we discuss the episode and stuff.
Don't forget, Matthew, will you? Anyway, talk about Jenna Louise. I nearly said it myself. Talking about Jenna Coleman. Sorry, did you actually get around to talking about what you wanted to talk about while I was shut up? While I was celebrating.
Gloating.
Gloating. Yeah.
Gloating.
Blatantly gloating. Yeah. Well, he's going to win the quiz. I've got to get something back off him. Yeah, go on, Matthew.
True.
No, I said my bit before you corrected me, so.
Yeah, and I've forgotten what I was going to say after all that. Oh, yeah, no, we're talking about the anniversary special. Now, Moffat lies. He managed to wangle Jenna Coleman into the Asylum of the Daleks without anybody realising that was going to happen. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if he's managed to do something to get Capaldi into the 50th anniversary. And it would be a bit of a shame if he isn't in there somewhere, wouldn't it? Where it is.
Capaldi pronounces it Capaldi, not Capaldi.
Or Capaldi, then, just to annoy you. Peter Capaldi. for fuck.
Adam Pearson.
Reese Pearton.
That's what it originally was, so I'm not going to complain about that.
Anyway, back to this story. Of course,
there's a story.
Somewhere in here, we have a story. Yeah,
yeah, I forgot what it was.
A story that would have fit into two episodes easily.
I'd say three episodes.
Okay, yeah, three.
Oh, four. Come on. I think a four-part would have been fair. Three would be a little bit rushed, I think. Now, I think that the doctor is sort of coerced into getting some sort of communication device sorted out, isn't he, to communicate with these aliens before escaping again.
And I guess the TARDIS translation circuit wasn't working.
Yes, well, it wasn't anywhere near
the aliens
there, was it?
The aliens don't appear to speak, so that would be why the TARDIS translation circuit isn't working.
Well, good point, good point.
They speak later.
They do, yeah.
Oh, they do indeed.
After they built the device that will allow them to convert the pictographic communications the aliens use and their radio impulses into actual spoken language.
Well, has the TARDIS thing come into being at this point in Doctor Who?
They haven't mentioned it yet, have they? But clearly it works most of the time.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah,
but I mean, but even the fourth doctor says that the only reason
this
that
is the third doctor,
right? But I'm saying that even up to the fourth doctor, the ability to understand an alien language was just like a gift that he was bestowing. It wasn't, it never mentioned anything about
that.
I'm thinking about the four stories for this particular series. I'm sorry, this season.
Indeed.
I don't think that there were translations in any of these four stories. Spearhead,
Silurians.
Right.
Silurians. Wait, how the Silurians? I haven't seen the Silurian story, so
Silurians appear to speak English, but they've been in contact with one of the scientists.
Okay.
Spoiler alert, they've been in
Does
contact
it
with
matter?
Scientists.
Back to this story.
I've got Silurians, but of course I've only watched the extras.
Right. Anyway, back to the story. They've devised a way of controlling the aliens. Sorry, Mary. They've devised a way of controlling the aliens with a little gold box thing. And the Doctor, meanwhile, I say he managed to escape, but all he gets is a little... Oh, yeah, he escapes getting killed by the exploding briefcase that kills Beardy Man.
He
ends up with a scratch, with a little plaster on his face, just for that one scene.
Yeah, just for that scene, right? Yeah. Next scene, and it's gone. Yeah.
And then Max, what's his name, dies for the first time.
Faulkner.
Yeah, he dies for the first time in the episode. But did he die? Maybe he was just shocked because he didn't actually make physical contact.
Yeah.
So I suppose
he's back on duty pretty fast.
Oh, he might have just been knocked out. But he looks pretty dead.
Didn't even scratch the table.
I think he's supposed to be dead, but they didn't realise that people
he's getting better.
40 years later would watch the stories over and over again, recognise all the incidental stuntman actors and regular, you know, behind the scenes. Hang on.
I like Max Faulkner, though. He's great.
It's quite interesting because mainly he was a bit of a stuntman, wasn't it? But he obviously had the ability to act as well. So he certainly got upgraded, didn't he? Bit like Terry Walsh in some episodes. Anyway, so it's just funny the way that they shoot. They sort of lean back with the guns, you know, and they look like they don't know how to use the weapons. Yeah. I think it's quite funny.
In fact, and then you hear that they were in the army, and it makes you think,
It's like when they're shooting the pistols, they sort of wave the pistols around as they're shooting them.
Yeah.
I was also wondering why so many single shots with what I think were machine guns.
One of the aliens steps in with his grey wellies kills Sir James, and you sort of don't feel a lot of sympathy for him just before the Doctor comes in and he's on the verge of getting touched. That's the end of the episode.
Now tell you, wouldn't the Doctor hear the sound of the vacuum cleaner though? You know, every time you hear the aliens, you hear the...
It's not Darth Vader, is it?
Oh, yeah.
Very noisy, and he doesn't even hear.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they were holding their breath when he got... I didn't hear anything. Right. Who's doing that?
Point deducted.
Who's doing that?
Sorry, that was me.
Right, point deducted.
I wasn't thinking.
No, you're eating. That's a problem. Right. Yeah, they use that exploding sort of effect quite a lot in this episode, where he blew the safe by touching it, and they had obviously some panel with minor explosives in it. Tell you what, this must have been quite a lot of money spent on this episode. All the props and the helicopters and the costumes
and
stuff.
I was wondering that because I thought they were trying to save money by not having the alien settings and everything, and yet there's so many people in this, so much equipment.
Yeah.
It went on forever.
Massive cast. I'm thinking perhaps.
Well, actually, they do save on the cast because they double up as different roles.
But also, it's still a large cast anyway. I think perhaps, where they have shortened the series at this point, that's obviously they would have had a budget for maybe a longer series. Maybe they're thinking, oh, why not? What we can do, we can plow some of this budget into one story and make it.
Yeah.
Quite big, and they have achieved that. Barry in my view, they achieved it pretty well in this story.
Yeah. Barry Letts talks about in his, I don't want to say autobiography, memoir is the better word, Who and Me, talks about this was the first proper story he did as a producer. He had kind of come in midway through production on Doctor Who and the Silurians, and that right at the very beginning of his time on Doctor Who, they had a mammoth overspend because of this story. Particularly the battle scenes and stuff, especially the helicopter and stuff in episode 2. And where Michael Ferguson came in, spent a whole lot of money that the production probably didn't have. But Barry Letts, not being experienced as a producer, suddenly discovered he was up to his eyeballs in debt all of a sudden. And I think Barry Letts tells a story about he was talking to Michael Ferguson, the director, and Michael Ferguson said, the director's job is to push things and to try and spend money. And the producer's job is to rein him in.
Yeah.
You just stole what I was going to interrupt you to say.
Excellent. Good. That saved a bit of time. Meanwhile, right. Sergeant Benson makes his return to Doctor Who, because also we haven't really seen him since the invasion. Of course, he was Corporal Benson then, but now he's Sergeant Benson. So it's nice to see Benson arriving in colour Doctor Who.
He's only in this story because Douglas Camfield had already cast him in Inferno, and they had decided they wanted to have the continuity between the stories.
Yeah.
So he got into this and took the place of an unnamed unit sergeant.
Okay.
A red shirt.
Right, the Doctor is planning to go up in the spaceship, while Regan sort of does himself up a bit like a mechanic and very, very easily infiltrates the terrible security of the space and starts twiddling some control knobs. And, of course, people fall off things, as they seem to do in this
era. The right ones to go to as well.
Because they're labelled quite conveniently, aren't they?
He's also got a map of the place he pulls out at one point, I think.
Yeah.
And the map.
He said that.
He's a big bruise.
So, meanwhile, I can't remember his blooming name now. Anyway, he gets given a nice dinner of a radioactive isotope.
Which one?
Oh,
Linux.
Which isotope? Linux. Oh, Linux, when he's in the little cell. Of course, you don't actually see him die. You just know that he's going to die, and they mention his death, I think, a little bit later on. But. Yeah. Yeah, that's quite sinister and very. That was again very James Bond, wasn't it? That's the sort of you see something like that in James Bond. There's a very funny shot of the rocket going up,
and
John Pertwee's face being pulled as if it.
I didn't like that.
He's being blown. He's got a shot back, which is blowing on him.
But this is a similar sort of thing to. Do you remember in the Android Invasion? I think it was when Sarah and the Doctor were in those little capsules, and they were getting the G-force, and they were pulling their faces back and stuff. And
I don't remember because I haven't seen it since the
what
early 80s.
I mean, that's one of the only things I actually remembered from the episode when I rewatched it when I bought it. Was the thing. When I actually watched it in the 70s, I remember them doing the pullback face bits. Oh,
I,
Robert,
I have
Rocket,
it,
sorry.
But I've only watched the extras.
Oh, I do apologize.
Yeah, anyway. You're not what? Missing much, Kirby. You're not missing much.
Quiet. Anyway, yeah,
I like the crawls.
The old, well, we'll end up watching it at some point, so there you go. Yeah.
I love Robert's surprise. He just goes, what?
She is pretty, though. Yeah, that girl you said that can't act, she is quite pretty, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't she in some other Doctor Who's? No! The one with the flutter eyelashes that Grease said can't act.
She's the dust control. The
yeah.
The one who talks in a monotone all the time.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure she's been another Doctor Who.
She's doing that because she's capsule communication.
Even when she was scared, she
did it. Oh, I know what you're saying. She's the voice of all sat-navs.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought Thomas was.
And Siri in America.
Welcome to the Apple Podcast.
Yeah, so meanwhile, the Doctor goes up and he gets into space. He's just about to dock with the Recovery 7 and the Mars probe, the other way around. He's in Recovery 7. He's going to dock with the Mars probe.
Settle down.
Why do you always have to be so pedantic? Goodness. It just takes up so much time. And then.
That's our job.
And then.
No, it's not. You're not paid.
Be quiet! That's that great big cigar-shaped spaceship from Star Trek hoves in on them.
Yes.
No, it does kind of look like the Doomsday Machine.
The Doomsday Machine, that's the one. Kind of. It looks like the Doomsday Machine, yeah. Or just a little bit flatter.
Kind of.
And it's the same concept. It doesn't eat it, though.
Dramatic music we need that dramatic music right now where the Doomsday Machine is coming in on them.
What? Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do Yeah, so anyway, so the Doctor then arrives on the spaceship and meets some very sort of hammy acting by the three... Who's that?
Who the hell is
that? I have a point to be deducted. I know it wasn't rustling cigarette
wasn't
paper.
Wasn't me.
Wasn't me.
No, it wasn't me.
Matthew.
Pointed, wasn't me.
Pointed, Matthew. Oh.
I don't think it
Everybody's
was me.
Everybody's saying it wasn't me. Anyway, moving on.
Who punched the microphone?
I'm not eating anything. I'm not drinking anything.
Okay, never mind. Anyway, as I was saying, the little sort of oval-shaped thing that they thought was a television looked really, really good. I think that thing you could probably have in modern Doctor Who, which would look
like a disco in there.
Would still look quite good. It really looks up to date and modern.
Those are the same actors who are playing the ambassadors.
Well, that's handy.
And the actor playing Van Lighten, I know this because I was listening to the commentary on the War Machines earlier this week. Was the brother-in-law of the director Michael Ferguson.
Anyway,
did you know Michael Ferguson? Michael Ferguson played the first Dalek.
Did he?
He was the plunger. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, he was the plunger at the end of the first episode of the Daleks.
Yeah. You were not playing connections at the moment. Anyway, right. So opens up.
That's our job.
And we see the CSO, the CSO thing of the one of the aliens just waving his arms around in a sort of hammy alien-y. Sort of.
Hey, what was that? Rosalind de Winter, who did the insect movement for Web Planet, did she do the movement for him as well?
Don't know, but it looked a bit daft.
And every time they show the shot of him, he's doing the same things. That must be one place where they saved money.
The Fru was some sort of Venetian blind sort of thing.
It was still the early days of CSO.
This part of the story was a bit where,
They had a really good CSO thing with louvers earlier. The screen comes up through the desk at Space Control and it louvers down and becomes a TV, which is really, really cool when I saw it.
Okay.
I like that.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's why I like the set of the Space
Station. They can do it well, but sometimes they can't.
I think they were deliberately making it look a little strange because it was alien technology.
Maybe so.
That's a possibility.
Because of you lot, I have completely forgotten what I was going to say.
Chris, but maybe this that's how the aliens communicate. Maybe they always wave their arms when they're communicating.
Maybe so.
They point at you to talk to you.
But anyway, this is where we find out that the aliens aren't evil. They're actually just misunderstood.
But they're ambassadors.
What I'm saying. That they're aliens and they're just being misunderstood or being used by evil men to try and their plan was a bit stupid, wasn't it? They had the capability of wiping out the whole planet, yet they were using them to to try and rob banks and stuff. Duh.
Fort Knox.
Gotta start off
that
small.
Too.
Yeah.
But anyway. So he's back. That's where he's back alive again, isn't it? Just after that, because don't get too shocked about it, Robert. For goodness' sake, Regan managed to get back into the sort of behind the scenes part of the space center through the guard who's just died and come back to life again, or recovered very quickly from being stunned. Pardon?
Maybe that's how he's able to get back in because the guard is still disoriented.
Well, maybe so. But anyway, he's got lots of hosing. Plastic hosing which he attaches to something. Yes? Pardon? Was it gone quiet? I thought Matthew said something.
No, not a word.
Okay. So the Doctor arrives back and... Be quiet! The Doctor arrives back and...
It was Jocelyn!
No, it was you! I heard Jocelyn. It was you going, the voices. And all I'm getting is the voices at the moment.
The angry voice.
Anyway, right. So so he's trying to feed gas into the Doctor's decontamination cell, and so as he can kidnap the Doctor. And of course, the Doctor says very well when it's time to help the baddies by creating a sort of translation device that actually works, so you can speak back and forth. When he arrives at the thing, actually, he's lying on his back. I just want to see if he's got his leg up. Because normally when John Pertwee lies on the ground, he has one leg up when he's unconscious.
The Pertwee death pose.
Yeah, leg up. No, but you don't. No, they zoom into his head a little bit, so you can't actually see whether he's got his leg up.
I'm just gonna, does. He does, though.
Does have his leg up, does he? He does, yeah.
And
playing
muscles.
Hang on. Yeah, he's got his leg up.
On his... face, but ends up on his back somehow, yeah.
There must have been a reason why he couldn't lie without his leg up.
Sore back.
He had a back issues.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. But he looks up at Liz and said, a tear, Sarah Jane?
I'm sorry.
No, don't cry.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, but the way he puts his hand up, it's very similar. Look, he puts his hand up. You could actually dub over those lines to that particular scene. But he doesn't regenerate, obviously. There's also
Sarah
a scene...
Jane, I mean Liz Shaw.
Yeah. There's a point in which one of the aliens takes his helmet off and we see the face of...
He's feeling a bit blue.
I thought that was really good. I thought the makeup was brilliant on that.
It looks like they packed Play-Doh all over his face.
Yeah, but it did look good, but we did only see it very briefly.
Right.
This is why I like the editing's pretty good in this, in that they do brief shots like that. Mm. I think it's very good.
Yeah.
Whereas
they
would have dwelt on it in the old days, wouldn't they? And spoiled
it. It reminded me a little bit of the.
And
they
would have
Hemavors.
Left his helmet off and walked around for.
Only the listeners would have got that. Only the listeners would have got that reference, because you lot are rabbiting over everything I'm saying at the moment.
We're making other points, Adam. We're not rabbiting.
No, you're rabbiting. Right, who's right?
No, we're making our own.
Who's right?
Me.
Me.
You go, Reese.
Right, there's a great big wooden box that's got a great big sign on this that says Isotope Radioactive, so they just decide to have a fight next week.
Well, that's the only way you can tell.
So blatant. I've just got this highly radioactive box here. I suppose it's only for viewers' benefit. What do we think of the effect, that little flashing red effect for whenever the aliens make contact
Batman!
With anything?
Batman!
You reckon? I quite liked it, actually. I thought it was quite effective.
Yeah. It's not bad, but it's a bit Batman.
It works. Didn't bother me.
It works for the time.
Only it doesn't work now, then, obviously.
No.
Don't do that funny snort to me, Reese Parton. Anyway, so this is where we see Caroline John's husband Jeffrey Beavers, as the radio operator with Sergeant
Dunton.
Oh, yeah, and this is also the episode where Carrington gets his men in to take over the space station and then sacks everyone.
Get away. Have I mentioned already that I thought Carrington sounded like Strax when he got angry?
Yes, on Facebook.
Yeah, you did. I didn't see that myself. I did look out for that, but I didn't quite see it.
Yeah, I kept an ear out and never noticed.
No. I noticed that Regan, though, with his blue shirt and his tie, did look a little bit, what he was wearing did look a little bit 10th Doctor to me, though, with that. He didn't have a stripy trousers, but the shirt and tie was quite 10th Doctor.
And Carrington and his men look suspiciously like the Soviet Red Army in their uniforms.
Yes, well, that's not surprising, is it? Did he have a toupee on? Because it certainly looked like one.
And Carrington, between episodes, at one point, did shave his mustache, the corners of his mustache, to give himself a little more of a Hitler look.
Okay.
Yes.
And, of course, is John Abernary is Toby Haydoke's favourite actor in Doctor Who, isn't he?
Yes.
Right. You were talking about earlier on about the four soldiers in Bessie. Yeah, that was quite good. And you saw Terry Walsh sort of going over the top of it, standing behind a soft top car for protection, and leaning the gun on top of it.
Hold on, didn't the brigadier before he went out? He said to Benton, "Lay on a jeep, Benton," and Benton didn't lay on a jeep.
Clearly,
Benton says we've only got one thing we can drive, and they cut to the scene of Bessie driving down the road with all the soldiers.
That's right.
This is where the brigadier has a bit of a wrestle with the couple of the baddies. And then one, of course, some of them has, because the only stunt they can really do well is rolling down a massive embankment cliff type thing.
Why not?
The punches they were throwing back and forth looked very fake to me.
That's because they were. But anyway, of course.
The sound effects are good, though.
It's awesome when the Brigadier and unit reclaim the Space Center. I do love that when they come back and reclaim it. And they take they take the ambassadors with them. And
who's yawning?
Me.
Sorry.
Morning.
Really? And that was brilliant.
It's only 6 a.m.
What did you say?
Oh, I know, but I've been up since 3:30.
Oh, anyway, I did hear what you said. Anyway, the bit where they open up the big gates to the Space Center, it reminded me a little bit of Tomb of the Cybermen, the way they touch it, isn't it?
Yes.
Me of Stargate, actually.
The Stargate?
Yeah. Stargate.
John Abernary. Does act slightly insane very well in this episode, I suppose. That basically is it. They come, Unix storm the Space Center, and everybody makes friends, and then it's the end of the episode.
I was wondering, during that scene, since the Michael Wisher does the countdown to the broadcast, is all of this being broadcast?
Yes.
Supposedly.
Bore you, Reese.
Yeah, once he starts talking, it starts being broadcast. Or at least that's what is intended.
No, I'm going to say what I think of this story. Quite like it. I think it's quite an entertaining. It's probably a little bit too long in some ways, but it's not really boring because there's lots of action and stuff. So, and I think Pertwee is really good. I think it's just quite a nice ensemble. I enjoy it. It's certainly a departure from most other Doctor Who of its time. It's an original story and very, very good. I really think they did a good job with it. Obviously, they did, like I say, plough a lot of money into it, and it worked. Made it work really well. But I agree that perhaps four or five episodes it should have been. But I think all the stories in this particular, apart from Spearhead from Space, this particular series were too long. Go on then, Reese. I know you said a lot on Facebook when you should have saved it for the show, but you can have another go now.
A lot. I said one paragraph worth of words. Anyway,
go on then.
I enjoyed it, but I've already said that I thought it was a bit too padded. But I thought it was a nice take on the usual baddies invading, which Carrington obviously thought they were. And I thought it was a nice story, but it was very padded. But
sit down.
I am sat down.
My cat just nicked my chicken.
Good cat, good cat.
I'm trying to figure out a way to make that part of my review. The cat nicked this story's chicken. I enjoyed it. I thought that
the big
main
chicken
cast
was in the, was in the
Kirby. Please don't interrupt Reese's synopsis. I don't want to be here
Please
all
don't
day.
Make a bad joke. we all know what you're going to say. I love the main cast. I thought they were fantastic. I thought that Carrington was nicely insane, and I could see a lot of influences on Stephen Moffat, like we've already mentioned, the spacesuit and the tape recorder. And I just
parrots there again, Kirby.
I enjoyed it, but it was over long.
Right, hang on. I'm just plugging the cable in. Mary, what do you think?
Overall, I did like it. And, you know, we all talk about how it's been padded and that, but that's pretty much par for that time period. Because even the movies that were out at that time had these long sequences, you know, people romping in a field with
that's what she
lovely
said.
Music and all that. Ooh, so, yeah, it's just part of that time period. Of
what
course,
movies have you been watching?
Well, the movies of that time, you know, when they were out. Of course, I pay attention to the clothes, and I like the doctor's. I like the doctor's outfits in this. It's very subtle, very very dashing looking, as opposed to some of the crazier stuff he wears later. And Liz's outfits, of course, are ridiculous. But then, you know, we know that there was a purpose to the hat, but I mean, we didn't even dress, you know, that crazy here in the States. But then I remember movies, being shot that took place in London, and they always seemed to be more, you know, brighter and a little out there in terms of design than the Americans wore. So maybe that was just in keeping with that time.
Austin Powers.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, no, Austin Powers is a spoof.
Is it? Really?
Okay.
Really?
Really?
Hey. And I kind of enjoyed Pertwee's, what is it, the...
Face?
Thinking so highly of himself, you know, when he gets, when that explosion happens and he shows up in the next, he shows up with a little bandage on his face and then by the next episode it's gone, you know, without even any sign of any injury.
Well, he's a Time Lord, he heals much quicker.
So, maybe. If Austin Powers was a parody, does that mean Spaceballs is one too?
Oh, no, that's true. That's documentary, I think.
Okay. Right.
I did enjoy Carrington's kind of craziness because he was very serious. He wasn't, you know, like scientist crazy. He was seriously convinced of what he was trying to do.
Yeah, exactly.
I really appreciated that.
But it was similar to in the Invasion of the Dinosaurs, where I think there was a certain amount of that type of craziness going on there.
Yeah.
And the only other thing I would really comment on is the music, which was really weird. They were playing.
Well, I loved it.
They were playing music that you normally hear, like in meditation centers massage parlors.
That relates to the aliens. Yeah.
Well,
relaxation
That was one thing about that music that, if you go out and watch my YouTube video about my visit to a theme park in China, it's based on the character of the Monkey King. We enter this one room, which is, we're supposed to be underwater, and there's mermaids all around, the Dragon King is there, but that same is playing in the background over and over again. It sounds exactly the same.
Wow. But it sounds like meditation, you know, relaxation music. And then the music that they played a lot of was that light and happy stuff, you know, and they were playing it sometimes when the scene really did not. Yeah. When Bessie was the only car that they could drive, you know, that music was appropriate because it was kind of funny and lighthearted. But there were times when they played it that it really didn't apply.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Mary there. I mean, even in Death to the Daleks, I like the music in that, but the boom, 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 ba-do-ba-doom isn't appropriate for that.
Yeah.
It's a great, the unit theme for this, as it were, the da-da, which you were just talking about. It's a great piece of music. It's a great piece of music.
It's
absolutely, completely, totally, and utterly wrong for most of the usage it's put to.
Right. Right, right, exactly. Yeah, the only time it's it was like appropriate was when they were all in Bessie with their, you know, machine guns, you know, because it was silly like the music was,
Yeah, Reese, don't get me started on Kerry Blyton's music. Don't get me started on Kerry Blyton's music. Don't.
Right then, okay. Can we move on then?
Sure.
Can we, right. Next, Matthew, right, can you talk about Kerry Blyton's music, please? No, actually, no. What I'm going to do is we're going to move on to Robert because he's interrupted everybody else's synopsis and reviews so far. So please, everybody, feel free to interrupt Robert's very regularly. So, Robert, what do you think of this story?
Well, I love it because I love Robert.
Yeah, I thought it was quite good as well. Robert. Actually, funny enough.
Excuse me, I think
Notice? Yeah, I did, actually. Ronald Allen, he was in Crossroads, yes. And he was also in the Dominators as well, yeah. Yeah.
And Michael Wisher was sounding very like Davros when he's doing his to-camera bits, I thought.
Did he?
I didn't think so.
I didn't either.
I did.
Really?
I did.
Well, so it's quite interesting we had two Davroses in this story.
Yeah, didn't you know that?
Yeah, I did. That's what I just said. That's what I just said.
Roy Scammell's got nice legs as well, I reckon.
Who?
Roy Scammell.
Is that a bloke?
The stunt guy who went over the weir.
Got nice legs? Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm getting a bit worried about you, Robert.
Wow. Showing another side.
So is Roy, what's his name as well? So what do you think of the story, though?
And as I said before, Cyril Shap should be in every...
Cyril Shap should. Cyril Shap should.
I'm eating, so... You caught me when I was eating, so...
Oh, that's unusual, isn't it?
I just love it, but yeah, I agree. It's a bit too long at 7 episodes. 4 would have done. But yes. I love the James Bond type of action kind of stuff. I think very well suits the time and the era.
And the Doctor as well.
Yeah, 7 episodes too long. Hmm.
Of course, if this had been the 11th Doctor era, they would have crammed everything into one episode.
Yes. Yeah.
They would have done...
Right,
we've done Reese, we've done Robert, Matthew. Ooh, have we done you, Matthew?
What did you do me?
No, we have not.
Well, could you talk about the music of... Oh, no, carry on. What do you think of this story?
Do you want me to talk about
what do you think of this story?
Well, I'm going to pull a Kirby from a couple of weeks ago and say that I know for a fact that the first time I saw this story was on December 31st, 2007.
Oh my goodness.
I know this because I ended my first year as a Doctor Who fan watching this story on New Year's Eve. And from the moment I found out about this story, I was really interested by it, and having seen it then and having seen it several times since then, it's become a favorite of mine. If you forced me onto a desert island and told me I could only take one story from each of the Doctors, I'd have a hard time picking between this one and Inferno for Pertwee. To be fair as well, the Pertwee era's biggest influences are James Bond and Quatermass. And being a big fan of both, and the fact that this is the story where really those influences are the strongest. The whole Quatermass thing with the British rocket program and whatnot. And then the whole, there's James Bond action sequences throughout all this, or at least a poor man's attempt, or a poor man's attempt at doing that. At any rate. I think part of the problem with this story, and while I acknowledge it's a favorite, I do acknowledge, yes, it's too long and it is padded. Part of the problem with the story is, in fact, it's not written by one writer, it's written by four writers, all pushing in very different directions. David Whittaker was originally commissioned to write this story as a second Dr. Jamie and Zoe story set well in the future. So think along the lines of The Moon Base, The Will in Space, or The Seeds of Death. And then when the format changed, Whittaker couldn't really adapt to it, and Peter Bryant and Derek Sherwin, the outgoing production team, didn't like it whatsoever. And as a result, Trevor Ray, who was the assistant script editor, rewrote episode one. Interestingly enough, when I interviewed Terrence Dix of Chicago TARDIS, back in 2010, and I asked him specifically about this story and Trevor Ray's contribution.
Name dropper.
Thank you. I'm very proud of that interview. It was the first ever interview I ever got to do. And
did you record it?
Fair enough.
Have you got it anywhere? Video or something?
It is. Well, the interview, there's a print version of it in, I'm trying to think, issues 10 and 11. I think
it won't be much use to us.
I have the original audio.
Good.
And God help us, the day should ever come something happens to Terrence Dix. I will release the audio to you guys,
thank you.
For the moment, because it was a print interview, it is going to stay that way, at least for the moment.
Okay.
Going back to what I'm saying, Terrence Dix ended up basically calling Trevor Ray useless and said he wasn't good for much of anything.
Only doing one episode, yeah.
Yeah. And also the fact that Malcolm Hulk in particular, and Terrence Dix to a lesser extent, wrote the rest of the story. And of all those four people, Malcolm Hulk's fingerprints are the most apparent.
Yes.
And what this story really is, and if you go and you watch the Silurians, which you really should, Kirby.
Yes. I plan on it.
What this story kind of is an alien invasion take on the Silurians. Both stories have similar beginnings. They both have scientists in the establishment who are involved with the aliens or monsters at the heart of the crisis. And the fact that the aliens aren't quite what they seem, and the doctor's kind of stuck in the middle of it trying to keep a war from breaking out. But really, there's two big differences between this story and Silurians. The first off is that Silurians was very insular. This one is very action-packed, as we've said before. The second is that...
How?
Silurians was very much driven by the egos of the various characters, who all made things worse, whereas this story is really being pushed by the motivations of General Carrington, John Abernary, wonderful actor, and the fact that Abernary is doing everything because he senses his moral duty. He's... Without wishing to make a overtly political statement, he's like somebody who's ultra right wing and fears anything that's not British, anything
xenophobic.
That's not, xenophobic. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. And the really interesting thing as well for me is that the Brigadier at the end of the Silurians, spoiler alert, blows up the Silurians in the cave.
Kirby, don't listen.
I knew that.
But in this story, but interestingly, one story later, the Brigadier is taking the Doctor's side and trying to effectively prevent somebody else from doing what he did the previous story. And it's kind of an interesting point of the Brigadier.
He's had a good long think about it.
Yeah.
Can you please get Kirby to do his review? Because we haven't got much time left and I've got a quiz to do and the feedback. Oh, we've got loads of that, haven't we? So, yeah. Kirby, when Matthew's finished, could you take over? I'm going to go and cook some dinner.
Oh, you are the weakest link. Goodbye.
That's awful. That is awful to listen to, isn't it?
Yeah, fortunately, I did get some of that, but if he's trying...
I know, he's got to make the dog's dinner.
He's trying to give us instructions that we could not understand.
No,
I think he wants to finish your review because we've got the quiz coming out while he goes and feeds his horse.
Matthew needs to finish his review and then it's my turn, is what he said. Yeah. Although he said it twice.
Or three times,
In a feedback loop with a lot of cyber leader on top of it.
That almost sounded like it.
Kirby will do his review.
Oh my goodness.
Oh dear.
Go on, Kirby.
No, Matthew's not done.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember where I was even at.
Huntsville.
In Huntsville.
Yeah. Directly over the center of the planet.
But that's where I am and I don't see him.
Huntsville, Alabama.
No,
Huntsville,
directly above the center of the earth.
Huntsville, Alabama, home of the U.S. Space and Rocket Center and NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center.
Up it in.
Dayton, Ohio, home of flight and the home of the Air Force.
Stanley, home of, whatever this place is home for.
Anyway, I'll finish my review very quickly so Kirby can do his bit. Favorite story of mine. It's got a lot of good action to it. A lot of good story. A lot of story. Maybe a bit too padded out, but that's maybe a bit of a problem with some of these stories. If you want a more detailed analysis from me, look up an article. I think it's in the Terrible Zodan issue 9 about this entire season called Mannequins, Reptiles, Astronauts, and Primords. And also check out my specific review of Ambassadors of Death in Celebrate Regenerate. Kirby Bartlett Sloan, your review, please.
Celebrate Regenerate.
Well, as I said before, I enjoyed it much better than I expected because I had been reading all over the place. It was very long and very repetitive.
That's what she said.
Isn't all of life?
Fred watched a little over half of it.
Fred.
The only reason she didn't finish watching was we just ran out of time and we took
it was 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, we took Julia to the Geek Daughter to university on Thursday and then we visited
her. First day.
Her first day of class is today. But she moved into her dorm on Thursday, and we also visited her on Saturday.
Is it that far away?
It's a two-hour drive one way.
Fair enough.
So it's just been busy. So I enjoyed it. Fred enjoyed what she did.
Get that name right.
And she turned to me at one point and said, I thought you said this was going to be a boring story. And she said, no, it's not boring.
You know what, Kirby? My wife even watched a bit of it. So there you go.
Wow.
And she considers classic Doctor Who weird. So
she's not wrong, but it's still good.
Yeah. Some of it is weird. Yeah,
some of it is very weird.
Yeah, it's not a boring story. It's dragged out a bit.
Yeah. And as I was sitting here watching it, I have my, that's my unit button.
Pardon
like
you.
The one, that's the, the button that the Brigadier has on his beret. I have a reproduction.
Ooh.
So, I have that on a shirt.
So I need to get a beret.
I don't have.
Proud possessions of
detergent that will get that out, Matthew.
I'm trying to recreate some stash.
So. Yes.
Has Kirby done his review yet?
I'm finishing up.
Okay.
It was good. A little bit long.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody. Right. Now we can move on. Thank God.
By the way, I first saw this story starting on August the 8th and finishing this morning, about 1 in the morning.
Nice one.
Now it's recorded for posterity.
Well, next week, of course, we've got Planet of Fire.
Ow!
What?
Ooh.
And can we decide the next one?
Yes, we will do just one step at a time. We definitely will decide the next one.
Yeah, but we need to know.
I've just said.
We need to know.
I have just said. We will decide the next one. Do people not listen or something? I'll say it a bit more clearly. We will decide on the next episode for reviews. In fact, the next few. Today! Okay, is that clear enough?
Sorry, I didn't understand that.
Crystal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Who's Crystal?
Oh, God.
Red Crystal.
Stay play, Doctor Who, the Ultimate Adventure.
Hello, 20 Midwire Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. Kirk Ibbis is to be the new Doctor. 55 isn't old. The Ambassadors of Death by Debbie Whittaker. Ronald Allen, who plays Professor Cornish, was famous for playing a character in the soap called Crossroads. Cornish looks a bit pasty. I noticed that the helicopter registration looks like G-awful. A helicopter attacks a convoy. Yes. A stuntman falls off his motorcycle as it is heading for the camera. The bike kept on going without him and hit the film crew.
Yes.
When he's testing the control box, he tries stand up, move forward, and it works. I don't see how they would send kill Quinlan and destroy everything in his cell. They can change the name on the van after a raid, but they only do it once. The BBC saving money, I expect. She's explaining in Infotex that the Mars probe has no heat shield, so that is why it has to link up with Recovery 7 to take them down to Earth. The commentary mentions that they had music during the link-up because there was music in the film 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hello, Van Lyons. Yes. What is the capital of Australia?
Bye for now.
Excellent. Thank you, Ian. I'm now going to do something I haven't done for a few weeks. Can anybody guess what it is for a point?
The charts.
Nope. What I'm going to do is...
What?
If you want to send feedback into the show, because nobody else seems to want to, please do at 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. That's 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. Mary, we're sponsored by someone. Who are we sponsored by?
Oh, I'm getting good at this now. Whoone.co.uk.
Is that whoone.co.uk?
Correct.
That is.
Ian's back on. Shut up, Ian. What is it with Ian Kirk's feedback that it spontaneously starts replaying itself if you're not careful?
Who's controlling it?
The Mac.
Hello?
Who's controlling the Mac?
Silent for a second.
Who did?
Everybody.
Did they? That's because my Mac, who's controlling this Skype call, went a bit funny because Ian Kirk's feedback decided to replay itself. Right, what we've got coming up, we've got the DWM 50 Years, The Companions, a special .2 magazine.
Excellent.
Price $9.99. The Wheel of Ice is a book by Stephen Baxter. The DWM 463 is also out with Peter Eccleston. Notice I say Peter Eccleston because that's what Rufus Hound said.
Okay, come on.
But this is what I want. Who did that?
That was great. Microphone.
Not me.
Somebody knocked their microphone, and I'm not going to let it go this time.
I'm using the onboard microphone on my PC, so it's hard for me to sort of knock it.
And I had rolled
unless
away
I was going like that.
I had rolled away from my desk to grab my shoes.
Right, anyway.
Probably you then, Kirby.
Anyway, what I want to was this thing. It's Doctor Who figures, toys, gifts. I'll be quiet. 11 Doctor microfigure set 2. Which is what I want, so I might be nipping up to Who Won in Ride to get that. And I'm going to get really cross in a minute if people don't stop banging their microphones.
Grace?
Gone very quiet all of a sudden.
What?
Well, Adam, where do you keep all these little figurines that you
Do I keep them? I keep them in their box and put them on a whatever I can put them on, really, at the moment.
Mary, have you seen the documentary that he put on YouTube?
I don't remember. Him showing his little figurines.
Oh, yeah. Careful what you were saying. I got a bit worried for a moment there. Right now, after just to raise the tone, it's time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One.
We won't.
Correct.
And
it's the same order as last week because I couldn't be bothered to write out a new list. So the first question goes to Kirby. What episode did Sergeant Benson first appear in?
I'm going to guess one because we tend to do these in the order of the episodes.
Not all the time. It's incorrect. Anyone would like to come out with the right answer?
I think I know.
Hang on. What's that noise come from?
That was
Who said I know then? That's going to get the point for the.
Well, I said I know.
Oh, go on then. Go on then, Robert. Go on, Robert.
Well, he's only Sergeant Benton in this story because he was Colonel Benton.
I know.
Benton
so, what episode was it then?
Oh, number.
Yes!
I take a guess and say it's episode 4.
Probably
no. Wrong,
I know. No, that's it's all gone now. You can say the answer. We won't get any points for it. Go on then, Matthew.
Episode 5.
Correct. We don't get any points for it.
Oh, episode right. 5.
Robert.
Yes, that's me. Yes. Yes.
What is the full name of the British astronaut featured in the opening scene?
And now we do it in episode order.
No.
Right. Oh, I didn't know Miss Van Dyden, but
no,
I know
that's not his full name. Right, who said that? Was that you, Mary, saying I know?
Isn't it Charles or Charlie?
It is!
Yay!
Dad, Mary.
Mary, your question.
Okay.
How long has there been no contact for?
Seven months.
That's correct.
Well done.
Reese.
Yes.
What are the names of the missing astronauts?
I know.
Mary knows. Give it to her.
Oh, Mary.
Frank Michaels and James Laffey.
Oh, I'm going to give you a point for that because it was so close. It was Frank Michaels and Joe Laffey, but that's good.
Oh,
I don't think anybody would deny you a point there. Reese. Oh, we've done you, haven't we? Sorry. Yes. Matthew.
Yes.
Here we go.
Here we go.
What and is the doctor trying to reactivate at the beginning of the story?
What is he trying to reactivate?
And you've got to get it word for word, hasn't he, everybody?
Oh, yes.
I know.
I honestly can't remember.
Go on, Henry.
The TARDIS time vector generator.
Correct.
Ooh, very good.
I can't believe I couldn't remember that.
Right, Kirby.
Yeah. Matthew.
Kirby.
Yeah, by the way, I expect to get around zero yeah, points okay. for this.
Kirby.
Kirby.
Yes.
Kirby.
You will get zero if I don't answer the question. How many seconds into the future were the Doctor and Liz projected?
10.
Nope, anybody else?
No, I know.
Go on, Mary.
15.
Correct.
Seconds.
Robert.
Already?
What do you mean already? It's your question.
Yeah, go ahead.
What is Professor Cornish's first name?
I know.
Ralph.
Correct.
Oh.
Ralph!
Oh.
Mary.
You had to bring that up.
Mary. Mary, how many clamps are undone before the hatch opens?
4.
Correct.
Reese. Base make 5.
Reese.
Yes.
What does the doctor tell the guard that he does not believe in?
He doesn't believe in
astrology.
Hang on.
Wait.
I know he doesn't.
Hang on. Pardon, Reese.
Comes for a pass of some sort.
Correct. Doesn't agree. He doesn't believe in passes. Right, Matthew.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
What term does the doctor use to explain the high pitch sounds?
Oh, crap.
Nope.
No.
I know.
BBC Radiophonic Workshop.
I know.
Go on, Henry.
Synthesizer.
High frequency accelerated impulses.
Correct. And after those rounds, the current scores are in last place, last place, Kirby and pretending to be rubbish Matthew with no points, because obviously it's going to be coming up at the back point.
It was just like the Tony Haydock thing all over again. Yeah. I know everybody else's questions, but don't know my own.
Oh, right. Okay. In second to last place, Robert with 2. In second place, Reese with 4, but in the lead with 7 points, Mary.
Yeah.
And the next question.
Goodness.
Yeah, all right. Next question goes to Kirby.
Have you noticed that we are rapidly making Mary an expert on Classic Who?
Yes. Yes.
Well, she's enjoying Classic Who.
Anyway, right. Mary.
Yes.
Sorry, Kirby.
No,
Kirby.
Yes.
Right. How many unit soldiers are shot dead during the warehouse battle?
Wild guess, 4.
Correct.
Oh.
Wow. Nice.
Robert, who's in charge of the computer department? This is a really easy one. Should be think yourself lucky.
Oh, that's Tertullian, isn't it?
No, his full name.
Bruno Tertullian.
Correct.
Tertullian.
Bruno.
With his fake accent.
Yes. This is for Mary.
No, it's his outrageous accent.
Mary.
Yes.
Which city reported a dangerous solar flare build-up?
Ooh, I don't remember. Give it to him.
Was that Rob? Was that Matthew?
Yes, Matthew. It's Matthew.
Go on in, Matthew.
It's Houston.
Nope, it's Athens.
Ooh.
You sure?
Reese. Quite sure, yes. Quite sure. Reese.
Yes.
Oui. Right, here we go. What magic did the Doctor use to hide the tape?
I know
as well, yeah.
I don't.
Go on in, Mary.
That's for T.
Transmigration of object. Yes. Yeah.
Matthew.
Woo!
Yes.
What is 2 and 2 according to the computer?
5.
Oh, come on.
Correct.
Please make 5.
It's also a potentially a reference back to George Orwell's 1984.
Okay. Kirby.
Or Star Trek The Next Generation.
Kirby.
Yes.
Where is the space capsule due to land?
I know.
I don't know.
Matthew?
Southern England?
I'll give you a point for that. Somewhere in the south of England. It's near enough, I suppose, isn't it? Right. Robert. You're going to get this one because you only just mentioned it. What letters were on the side of the helicopter smoke bomber?
I didn't know. It was Ian. He reckoned it was G awful.
Correct. Mary.
Yeah.
What does the Doctor use to stick the villains to Bessie?
I can't remember the name of it, so give it to me.
No, it was Reese that came up. I know first.
Oh, okay.
The anti-thief device.
Correct.
Okay.
Reese.
That's good.
Yes.
Who is the spy at the Space Center?
The spy who loved
Most
me.
Of them.
Most of them, I know. But there was one specific one, the first one that sort of was fairly obvious that he was in a room and he's going to make a phone call.
I know.
So, I know.
Was it Sir James?
No. Go on then. What's his name? Kirby. You said you knew.
What's his name?
No, it was actually Dobson.
I know.
Oh, sorry, Matthew. I should have let you answer. You wouldn't have got any points for it, but I would have. Right, Matthew.
Who was it? Was it
Dobson?
Yeah,
it's Dobson.
Yeah.
Dobson.
Yes.
Oh,
Matthew.
Yes.
You get this one. Who is the pompous politician?
Oh,
name and
that's
title.
Easy.
Full name and title. Correct.
Yes.
Right. After those rounds, in last place with 2 points is Kirby. In second to last place, joint second to last place, with 5 points is Reese and Matthew. In second place with 6 points is Robert. Ooh. And in the lead with 8 points is Mary.
Still? Yeah. All right.
For the time being. Right. Kirby.
Yes.
Right. Who composed the incidental music for Ambassadors of Death?
Too easy.
I know.
Give it to Matthew.
I know,
though.
Yeah, Kirby.
Go on in, Matthew.
Huh? How do I know?
Is it Matthew?
He's a well-known composer.
Right. Matthew.
Can I answer?
Yes.
What can I say?
Correct.
Dudley Simpson?
Too late. Matthew's already said the answer. Robert.
Yes, sir.
When the Brigadier discovers they have been duped after this capsule is found to be empty, who does he decide to visit?
Who's saying who's to visit?
When the Brigadier discovers that they have been duped after this capsule is found to be empty, who does he decide to visit? He goes off, right, I'm going to...
Oh, that's right, because he was putting off something else, wasn't he?
So who was
he says, I'll visit someone before
That's it. Who is that person?
I know.
Was it Sir James? No, it wasn't Quinlan, because he was dead yet, wasn't he? Was it Quinlan? I'll say
no,
Quinlan.
No, it wasn't. Right. Go on, Matthew.
The guard captain.
Near enough. Go ahead, Commander, but that's near enough. Mary.
Yes.
What colour van are the astronauts taken away in?
Oh, that's easy.
Well, the van was white.
That's one of the colours, I'll give you that.
Yeah.
There was another colour as
well.
Hang on. Give Mary a chance to get the other colour.
When the sign changed, you know, the sign was blue.
Well, that's the other colour I was looking for. No, that was a blue and white van, but you said the both colours, so I'll give you that.
Okay.
Right, Reese.
Yes.
How many rads does Liz read off the astronaut's radiation report?
2 million.
Correct.
Ooh.
Matthew.
Well done, Reese.
Well done, Reese.
What,
yes, Adam.
What logo was on the side of the villain's van before it changed to Silcock Bakeries?
Oh, I know. I know.
I keep remembering
it's
the Silcock.
Something electronics.
No, 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 I know.
Go on in, Mary.
It's the Hey Ho Launderers.
Oh, that's right. Oh. Yeah.
Weren't those names of production assistants?
Quite possibly.
Yeah, they were.
Right, Kirby.
Yes.
Dr. Lennox is played the same way as most of his Doctor Who characters by whom?
Hang on. Cyril Sharp. That's right.
Well, near enough. Cyril Sharp. I'll give you a point.
Okay.
It was near enough. Everybody else would have got that one. So
he said, "Hang on," because he had to look it up on Wikipedia.
No, I didn't.
Robert.
That's why it was wrong too.
Robert, yes, right. What type of car does Liz get chased by?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not very good with that. Did you already say it was like a Cortina or
correct.
Something? No. That's,
Mary.
Get it right then.
Watch out.
Get, yeah, Mary, what? Ready? Who plays yes. General Carrington?
Oh, too easy.
I know.
Well, you all say it's easy, but I don't remember.
Well, Robert said too easy first before Matthew came with I knew. Go on in, Robert.
John O'Bannery.
That was Reese.
Correct. Reese.
Who's Toby Haydock's favourite
yes.
actor.
Yes, Reese. According to Carrington, what would mean disaster for the whole world?
Reese getting the answer right.
If word got out about the ambassadors or the aliens?
Nope. Anybody?
I know.
Okay.
Go on in, Matthew.
I don't know.
If the rocket with the doctor on it gets launched.
Correct. Matthew.
Well, he was.
Yes.
Hang on, I'm getting interrupted by Isabella. Yes? Whatever, I've got your mum to ferry around.
Go to the park.
Yeah,
and lunch as well. So would you mind keeping, you know.
I want lunch now.
Not now, when I've finished doing this. So off you go.
I want lunch now.
Lunch now. Lunch now, damn it.
Right. Door again.
Now. Anybody shut door to now?
So you answer to life, the universe, and everything.
Let me get on, and then lunch can come. At 12.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. Right, Matthew, where do we go up to? Matthew,
she's starting to sound more and more like Alicia.
She's starting to sound more and more like Alicia. Well, you are. Be quiet.
Yay,
where do I get up to? Right. This is Matthew's question.
Yes.
No. Whose laboratory were the aliens being kept? In whose laboratory were the aliens being kept?
Lennox's laboratory?
You sounded like you burped then. No, it's not. Right, anybody with the answer? No, it's Heldorf's laboratory.
Who?
I don't know, but that's whose laboratory it was. Isabella, would you be quiet? Right, this is the current score. In last place with 3 points is Kirby. Second to last place with 7 points is Reese. In third to last place with 8 points is Matthew. In second place with 9 points is Robert. And in the lead with 11 points is Mary. Right, this question is for Kirby. I'm going to have to check on the dog's dinner. Actually, I'm going to see if this dog's dinner's boiling up, but don't touch anything.
Oh, I don't think he can.
Right. Kirby.
Yes.
Where are most of the parts the Doctor has ordered coming from?
Japan.
Correct.
Mm.
Robert. Yay. What variant fuel do the Space Centre have to use?
M3 variant.
Correct. Mary.
Isn't that like a highway or something?
excuse me, everybody. Excuse me, everybody. Can everybody do Mary courtesy? The courtesy of not saying I know, or whatever, like, when she answers this question, because it does rather put her off, doesn't it, Mary?
No.
All right.
What is Carrington's first name?
Darn, I can't remember.
Okay, anybody?
John.
Anybody?
I know.
Go on in, Kirby.
John.
No, Gerald. Reese. Could you?
Yes.
What malfunction initially held up the rocket countdown?
Oh, that's right.
Ah,
of the countdown.
I think I know.
Give it to Robert. I don't know.
Hang on, you said I don't. I know first. Was it you, Robert?
Robert.
Yeah. Come on, Robert.
It's the fuel injection correct system.
Yeah.
Matthew.
Yes.
I've lost my place. Hang on. There we are. Right. What meal does Lennox get while in unit's care?
A radioactive isotope.
Correct. Right.
It wasn't very hung. It wasn't very
delicious.
Nice,
it was too. Right, Kirby.
Yeah.
What letters on the side of the Doctor's rocket? What are the letters on the side of the Doctor's rocket? Sorry.
Oh, that's a hard one.
The rocket.
That's what she said.
The rocket or the capsule?
The rocket.
The rocket. I don't know.
No.
That's hard.
Yeah. That's what she said. Can you get a wiper, please? Mop up the tea like this spill everywhere. Right, anybody?
That is difficult.
Is it UK8 or
no,
something?
No, it's GP. Sorry, GB UKR. Right, Robert.
R. Yes, sir.
How long should the burn be on the Stage 3 rocket?
Oh my goodness, I can't remember. Is it 3 seconds?
30 seconds. Oh damn! Sorry, everybody. Sorry. I should have didn't give everybody a chance.
I knew that one.
I do apologise. That was Robert's fault. No, it's actually Isabella's fault for making me clear up a tea stain while that question was going up. Okay, sorry, everybody.
It was.
It wasn't.
Right. Next question goes to Mary.
Yes.
What do the astronauts think they are watching on the spaceship in extended quarantine?
Is it a football match?
Yes.
Yes.
Hey.
How do you know this not a cricket match?
It was clearly a football match, thank you.
Is it talking about kicking the ball?
Yes.
Yeah.
Reese.
Okay.
I want my lunch now. Yes.
Reese. Reese. Right. Isabella wants to read this question, so I hope this works.
I know which one.
Don't hold it. Go on.
Who planned to send up a unmanned vessel of...
Do you want me to read it, Isabella?
Yeah, you can.
Thank you. Who planned to send up an unmanned vessel to observe the alien ship?
The Americans planned to send up an unmanned vessel.
Right, Matthew.
You mentioned that before too, Adam.
Matthew.
Yep.
Yes.
Who played Private Parker in The Ambassadors of Death?
Private Parker.
Yes, that was his listed name in the title sequence.
James
Clayton.
Nope.
Yep.
Robert.
That's not Jeffrey Beavers, is it?
Yep. And after that round, and with hardly any questions left, the current scores are...
Well, I am going to look that up, because I don't think Jeffrey Beavers...
Hold on. Yeah, because I'm... Hold on.
Oh, dispute, here we go.
Dispute.
Wikipedia disagrees.
Wikipedia lists Jeffrey Beavers as Private Johnson and James Clayton as Private Parker.
So somebody was looking it up while the while we were on.
Yeah,
I think something was Penny.
Right,
I'm going to give you another question. Right.
Okay.
Was that your question, Matthew?
Yes, it was.
Okay, have this one instead.
Hold on, let me close Wikipedia so nobody can...
Here we go, he's got Wikipedia open.
It's all coming. I've got to check the dog's dinner.
We knew.
Hold the headphones. Yeah. Put them on, chat to the others while I sort out the dog's dinner.
For the record, I only brought the thing up so I could prove I was correct.
That's what she said.
Go on, Isabella.
How do we answer a giggle?
With a giggle.
We're waiting for the next question, Isabella.
My dad said that I have to put the headphones on and talk to you for a little bit.
That would help. What are you doing? Are you going to the park?
No, not yet.
Yeah, later though. And you want your dinner, your lunch first?
Yes.
Resume. We've got about 8 minutes to finish this, so I need to come back now. So say goodbye, please.
Bye.
Bye, 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 Isabella.
Bye, please.
Bye. Bye.
Right.
Farewell.
See you, Reese.
Hey. Right, where do we get up to?
See everyone, I've got to go here.
It was my question. Your question.
Right, this is your replacement question. Which regular background character played the unit guard who dies in episode 5 and comes back to life in episode 6?
Oh, I mentioned that. You mentioned that.
I mentioned it.
Is it Max Faulkner?
It is.
Yes.
Stop licking my paperwork.
I was thinking Derek
Stop
Ware.
Picking my nose.
Right, after that round and with hardly any questions left, the scores are in last place with 5 points, Kirby. In second to last place with 9 points, Reese. In second place with 12 points is Matthew. And in joint first place with 13 points is Robert and Mary.
What?
Wow.
Mary. Wow. High five, Mary. High five, Mary.
So with all Robert, the pressure on, here's the last load of questions. Kirby.
Yes.
Cornish thinks Carrington is insane. What does the Brigadier think?
I don't know.
Oh. I know.
Matthew?
That he knows more than he's telling.
No, he's overwrought is the answer. Robert. What is the Doctor not building when urged to hurry up?
When's this? Ooh, I
know. I think. Go on in. Hang on. Go on in. Sorry, Robert first. Robert?
To Mary.
Oh, Mary?
Is it the communication device?
I'll give you a point for that. It's the crystal set, which is essentially a communication device. Right. Okay. Mary.
Yes.
What is the name of the reporter played by Michael Wisher?
I knew it. I don't remember.
Robert said he knew it first. Go on, Robert.
Yeah, it's John Wakefield.
Correct.
Oh, yeah. Because he does mention his name several times.
Reese.
Okay, Robert, that puts you ahead.
Reese.
Yes, I do. No, ask that question.
Reese!
Do you ask me that question, Robert? Robert?
Adam.
What does Regan say when the Brigadier arrives to rescue the Doctor and Liz?
What about the Brigadier arriving to rescue the Doctor and Liv?
What does Regan say when the Brigadier arrives to rescue the Doctor and Liz? They're usually quite good on dialogue.
I remember about that.
I don't remember.
So who does? Anybody? Matthew?
I think.
Isabella knows.
Matthew?
He makes the comment about using the astronauts and tells them to remember that later.
No, go on in, Isabella.
No?
Hang on, Isabella knows.
Make yourself at home.
Here's the correct answer, but you don't get any points for it.
She was looking it up.
Quite clearly, she's got saw the answer. This is the last question. Last question. Matthew.
Yes.
Be quiet. What did General Carrington keep harping on about?
His moral duty.
There's the correct answer. Oh. Right. And the final scores, because I cocked up one of the questions and I haven't got a tiebreaker. The final scores are in last place, Kirby with 5.
Is this the worst I've ever done?
In second place with 9 is Kirby, but joint winners this week with 14 points each, Robert, Mary and Matthew. But essentially, Robert got a point deducted for wrestling sweet papers earlier on in the episode. That knocks him down to 13. So the joint winners, doesn't matter, still wrestling. That knocks the scores down to joint winners, Mary and, surprise, surprise, Matthew.
Yay.
Yay.
Yay, us.
But shall I do that to point? Because Matthew had Wikipedia open during the episode.
Yes,
I did not have Wikipedia open during the episode.
We heard and you admitted it.
That
I brought it up to settle the dispute because I know that Adam got the question wrong.
That's what you're telling us now.
So I found it. Right. Before we move on to finishing the show, you want to find out what we're reviewing after the Planet of Evil next week. So we're going to do that. We're going to do that. Planet of Fire, listeners. I meant Planet of Fire.
When will we be doing Planet of the Fire?
That's what she said. Just a second.
I've already watched the first episode, Planet of Fire, and it looks really good.
Matthew, yes. Alicia just asked who Matthew is. I thought that was quite a funny question. Yeah, for about
about
50 episodes, Alicia. Well, never mind.
He's another American, gradually Americanized version.
It's Matthew, right? Well, if you speak to him, you'll find out, won't you?
How long has he been on the show for?
How long have you been on the show for, Matthew?
I've been sending in feedback regularly for about a year now, and I've been on the show for.
She can't hear you, so it's pointless. She can hear you now. I've got you on the speaker.
I've been sending in feedback for about a year, and I've been co-hosting for about, what, a couple months now?
Yeah.
I'd say it was about right. You don't need any points for that, but yes.
And I was a substitute host occasionally before that.
Right then, these are the options for next week. Right.
No, the week after.
Yeah, the week after. It's Planet of Fire next week, just to reiterate.
And when will that be? Sunday or Monday?
Unfortunately, Sunday.
Okay. Yay, Sunday.
Right, so the choices are Spearhead from Space, Megloss, or Attack of the Cybermen.
I think I have all three of those.
I think I have all three of those. Cybermen.
You have everything.
I don't want another perk.
I don't have Planet of Fire. I'm actually having to get it from Netflix.
Right, so did I just say, Mary said she doesn't want another Pertwee, so that cancels out Spearhead from Space. Right, so now it's between Megloss and Attack of the Cybermen.
Isabella says Attack of the Cybermen.
So are we going to go for that?
Attack of the Cybermen it is.
Go with that.
Yeah, I've been meaning to rewatch Attack of the Cybermen. This is a good excuse.
Good, right. So then episode 181, the choices are Mind of Evil, Keys of Marinus, King's Demons.
King's Demons only a 2-episode.
Yeah. Well, Mary's been pushing to do Hartnell, and Keys of Marinus is a Hartnell.
So, what did you say it was?
Keys of Marinus, he's talking about.
Keys of Marinus, that's Hartnell. Do you want to do Keys of Marinus then?
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Keys of Marinus. Sounds good.
Who's asking you, Isabella? You're not going to watch it anyway.
Doesn't have dollars in it.
And for episode 182, the options are Dragonfire, the Demons, and the Stones of Blood.
Ooh, Stones of Blood sounds good.
It is good, yeah.
It is good.
It's Key to Time with Mary Tam.
So are we going for Stones of Blood?
Okay, Stones of Blood.
Right, so that's it. That's the next few episodes sorted. So I'll just recap.
Excellent.
Right, 179, next week, Planet of Fire. 180, cool. Attack of the Cybermen. 181, The Keys of Marinus. And 182, The Stones of Blood.
Excellent.
That's good. There's a good variety.
We have one of us. I just checked my list.
I do apologize for that. Anyway, thanks everybody for joining us on this week's episode of the 20 Megabyte OOO podcast. Oh, sorry, what?
Matthew's announcement.
Oh, Matthew's announcement. We nearly missed it. We haven't had any news this week, so we might as well call this news. Go on.
He's pregnant.
Well, I have two pieces of news, both centered around Concus Cerberus, the North Alabama Doctor Who convention, for anybody who didn't know. The big announcement was made... Yeah, the big announcement was made on Wednesday, August the 7th, which is a clue to who the announcement is about. We are very pleased to announce that Sylvester McCoy, Doctor Who number 7 himself, will be joining us at the convention next year.
You mean the Doctor?
Yes.
That's great news, Matthew, and it's nice to know there's a possibility we might get an actual Doctor bumper next year.
Yes.
If I don't get it first when I go to the Doctor Who convention on the 23rd of November, of course.
Kirby, I listened to a Big Finish audio over the weekend where on the extras he referred to himself as Doctor Who number 7. That's why I said that.
My opinion of him has now gone down.
Mine was already down, but never mind.
My other piece of news is that as of yesterday afternoon, registration has now opened for the convention if you'd like to buy tickets.
Good. And how can they buy those tickets, Matthew?
You can buy them on conquistorbris.com. That's conquistorbris.com.
And Matthew, you should post a link on the 20 megabyte page as well.
Sorry about the background noise. Isabella is currently trying to balance a tricycle on a pile of tat that we've put aside for a car boot sale. And it keeps falling off.
I'll put another link up on the Facebook page.
Excellent. Now we've got 161 members.
I've had a missed call from She Who Must Be
Obeyed. Yeah, we have really grown.
Yeah.
Did nobody hear the phone
That's
go
what
off?
She said.
Phone went off at 11:24. Did it go off and I didn't hear it? Somebody could have told me.
I heard a message.
Yeah, the phone ringing.
We heard the ship's whistle.
Yeah, we heard a text. We heard a text tone. But we didn't hear a phone.
Unless you accidentally phoned me. Let's find out.
Accidentally.
Could have been, but.
Hello, Moto.
Hello.
There was a missed call on my phone.
Yeah, you messaged me.
Yeah, Alicia wants her iPad back. She's been pestering me.
I don't know where it is.
Oh, you've told her, so she's got it back, has she?
It's in Isabella's room, but at the side where dressing up outfits is.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bye.
That's Deborah Pearson. She's lovely. Right.
Aren't you glad that she doesn't know that she was just on the podcast?
Yeah. Nothing surprises her. Anyway, so have we finished the Conquistorbris plug?
Yes, unless you want me to go down the ticket prices, but we don't have to do that.
Maybe next week.
I don't know if I can afford to go yet. So.
Oh dear, I can't afford to go. I know
Kirby,
that straight
Kirby,
away.
Kirby.
You
gotta save up on those Twiglets there, Kirby.
I have a daughter in university. Now.
Yes.
And he's got to buy Twiglets.
I can relate. I can understand. Anyway,
there is a convention closer to me now that I'm back in Georgia than Conquistorbris.
Anyway,
is that Timegate?
Timegate, yes.
Yeah, never mind. Anyway, I've got to get Isabella's dinner sorted out. So I'm afraid it's time to finish the show. Thanks, everybody. It's been fun as per usual. And I say next week is Planet of Fire. So yes, Robert, what were you going to say?
I was saying, so the dog's dinner is more important than Isabella's dinner.
No, it's just a timing.
She set that on first.
No, he's just going to divide it up and Isabella's going to get his share.
Anyway, thanks everybody. See you next week.
Bye.
It'll be 180 next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're getting old.
Bye.
past is another country. 987 is just the Isle of Wight.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APB Services production. Sponsored by whoone.co.uk and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.